Well, this evening, a conversation with Jesus. So please help me to the reading which we had, John chapter 4, where beside Jacob's well, a thirsty Jesus meets a Samaritan woman. They're alone. The disciples have gone into town to buy food. So what we're going to do tonight, very simply, we're going to eavesdrop on the conversation. And we have two things to say. And the first one is this: give me a drink. So we take it up at verse 7. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me a drink. Her reply is terse. Verse 9, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. It's an unpromising start. Looks like this conversation will end even before it's begun. Jesus is a Jew, she's a Samaritan, and as John says, Jews have no dealings with Samaritans except to trade insults. There was a sectarian divide. Jews and Samaritans hated each other. But not only that, Jesus is a man and she is a woman, which doesn't sound terribly earth-shattering to us. But look at the disciples' reaction when they return to find Jesus talking with this woman. They're shocked, aren't they? Verse 27, at this point that his disciples came and marveled that he talked with a woman. Because in that culture, it just wasn't the done thing. Some Jews didn't even talk to their wives in public. So Jesus is reaching across every divide to engage with her. He breaks the rules. And ignoring her unfriendliness, he keeps the conversation going. Verse 10. If you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Jesus turns the whole thing on its head. Instead of me asking you for a drink, you should have been asking me, and I would have given to you living water. What's living water? Well, it's a phrase used in Jesus' world, used by people for what we would today call running water. So a stream, a spring, a fountain. Look in that well. The water is still. It's been standing around for days, weeks, months. Would you fancy drinking it? Would you fancy a cup of tea made with the water from the well? But then if it was only water available, you'd have to, wouldn't you? But the thought of living water, cool, sparkling, fresh, clean, thirst-quenching. Oh, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Jesus' words are irresistible. And I wonder, did she pick up the double meaning? If Jesus was just referring to physical water, why would he say, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink? The gift of God, what does he mean? And questions about his identity. If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, who is this man? What is this living water? And now her whole attitude changes. Verse 11. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? You're obviously not talking about the water from this well. So where do you get this running water? And who are you? Verse 12. Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself as well as his sons and his livestock? Look at Jesus' reply. Verse 13, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. So Jesus is offering more than physical water. Drink this water and you'll thirst again. You'll have to keep coming back. coming back every day, every day, every day of every year of your life. This water will leave you thirsty again and again and again. But the water that I'm offering will satisfy your thirst forever. The water that I'm offering will never run dry. It will fill your emptiness to overflowing. And it will give to you life, new life, abundant life, everlasting life. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water, springing up into everlasting life. So my friend, in the heat and the dust of this world, Jesus promises cool, cool water. But to get it, you must go to him. Verse 14, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. To get this water, you must go to Christ. But once you've gone to him, you'll never look anywhere else. The search is over. The thirst is gone. Jesus satisfies the soul to overflowing. Why go anywhere else? But is it interesting? Jesus appeals to this woman's desire. Her problem is that she's been looking in the wrong place. Verse 15. The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw." Jesus struck a chord, hasn't he? His words make sense to her. Her life is a desert. And Jesus is offering her living water, running water. "Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst." But then another thought kicks in. This could all be one big wind-up. This could be just another man promising the earth. So in case she's sounding a bit too keen, she adds, verse 15, "Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw." So even if this living water isn't all that it's cracked up to be, at least it will make my life a bit easier. Well, now the conversation takes another turn. Verse 16, Jesus said to her, "Go, call your husband and come here." You want this living water? Go and get your husband. But Jesus touches a raw nerve. Look at her reply in verse 17. "I have no husband." We've all had those conversations, haven't we? Up until now, she's after the initial faltering start. She appears to be relaxed. She's talking freely. But now she clams up. And actually, in the original language, her reply is very terse. She cuts Jesus off. She's saying to him, "Don't go there. I don't want to talk about it." So what's the problem? Well, she has a history. And she doesn't want to talk about it. And so Jesus gently but firmly takes off the mask. Verse 17. "You have well said, 'I have no husband,' for you've had five husbands. And the one whom you now have is not your husband. In that you spoke truly." She's gone from relationship to relationship to relationship. She's gone to one man after another after another. And this is not promiscuous London. This is not internet dating. This is village life. All this has taken place in the relatively small area of her village. Five husbands already. And this life, she's not even bothered to get married. That's why she's alone. That's why going to get water from the well is a very social activity. The women would all go together, but she's on her own because she's shunned by the other women. They know exactly the sort of woman that she is. See what Jesus is doing. "Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst nor come here to draw." Okay? Well, go and call your husband and come here. I have no husband. No, you're right. You've had five husbands. And the man you're now with is not your husband. You're just living together. If you want this living water, says Jesus, it's going to mean change. Because it washes through your life. And as it washes through your life, it will make you clean. If you want this living water, it's going to mean change. Because it wells up inside you to everlasting life. So it means new life. Which can sound threatening. But is it? Jesus' point is that she's been too easily satisfied. She's been thirsty. In her thirst, she's gone looking. But she's gone looking in the wrong place. Which is why her life is a desert. In fact, her life's a train wreck, isn't it? And there's a sense when you listen to Jesus, he sounds like probably the first man who's ever really been concerned for her. That while other men have come along and they've taken her and they've used her, this man is different. This man seems to have her best interests at heart. And that does mean change. You can't go on like this, effectively, says Jesus. You've had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. You almost get the impression, don't you, that Jesus is trying to make life easier for her. Sounds like he understands her. He knows what's going through her mind, the life that she's been living, the misery of the life that she's been living. That he understands her better than she understands herself. Well, put on the spot, what does she do? She does what most of us do. She changes the subject. Verse 19, the woman said, "Sir, I perceive that you're a prophet." Okay, you seem to know all about me. Oh, you must be a prophet. Well, I've got a question for you. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Interesting question. But of course, it's a theological red herring. I never realized she was so interested in theology. But Jesus runs with it. Don't you love that? He's not pushy. Not assertive. Doesn't say, "Didn't you just hear what I said? Five husbands, you're with number six." Just runs with it. Verse 21, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father." Yes, the old arguments between Jews and Samaritans and who's got the truth and where you should worship God, all those arguments are fast becoming obsolete. It's not a question of doing the right thing in the right place. This mountain or Jerusalem. It's all about going to church or keeping the rules. It's about a right relationship with God. It's not about religion, it's about reality. Now, says Jesus, verse 22, it's true. The Jews, because they have the scriptures, they have a clearer understanding of that than you Samaritans. For salvation is of the Jews. But what really matters is not here or there or this or that. What really matters is a right-hearted relationship with God. Verse 23. "But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship him." So Jesus, the hour is coming, and now is. Something is changing. We can't carry on as we did before. There's a new day. The hour is coming and now is. Because the God who is can be known. When true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is saying, "Seek me. Know me. Love me. Worship me." I don't like this expression, but he's saying effectively, "Get real with me." God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. There must be reality. For 17 years I went to church. For 17 years I bobbed and kneeled and sat and stood. For 17 years I spoke magic words and lit candles. For 17 years, God was unknown to me. Nothing was real. Go to church at 8:30, get out by 9:15, the day's your own. I've done the God bit and get on with the rest of my life. And the two never have to meet again. And it wasn't that God was unreal. I was. And so was my religion. God is spirit. And those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. God doesn't want your religion. God wants you. And in a sense, Jesus has brought her back to the subject of living water, hasn't he? The real thing. A real relationship. The God who alone can satisfy my soul. For the Father is seeking such to worship him. Well, verse 25. The woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming. And John adds in, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. And Jesus, having brought her thus far, he now reveals who he is. Verse 26. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. It's an electrifying moment. This ordinary looking Jew, sitting by Jacob's well, looking tired and worn and needing a drink, is in fact the Messiah, the Christ, the one they've been waiting for, the one who's coming to make an end of sin and death and to usher in a new age, a golden age of joy and peace and blessing, the one who's come to right the wrongs, to put the world right, the one who's come to bring us back to God and to bring us home to heaven. Everyone's looking for the answer. But the answer is a person. The Christ. I who speak to you am he. In fact, it's more extraordinary still. The New Testament's written in Greek. Jesus actually says to her, I myself am. Is the Greek equivalent of the Hebrew name for God. In the Hebrew it's translated, I am who I am. So what are we getting at? If you ask God, what are you? He says, I am God. That's what he is. If you ask God, who are you? He answers in Hebrew, I am who I am. Which in the Greek is, I myself am. I am myself. This woman, talking with this tired, thirsty Jewish man, is actually face to face with the living God. We see the godness of God in the face of Jesus Christ. It's extraordinary. It's an electrifying moment. A little while ago, all she saw, verse 9, was a Jew. Then, verse 19, she saw a prophet. But now, verse 26, she sees the Messiah, God in the person of his Son, which unravels those mysterious words in verse 10. If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink. We now discover his true identity. Well, it's decision time. He's just revealed who he is. You're waiting for Messiah. I am Messiah. At this point, verse 27, his disciples came and they marveled that he talked with a woman. Yet no one said, what do you seek or why are you talking with her? The woman then left her water pot, went her way into the city. Why did she leave her water pot? Because she's already found living water. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. Well, point number two. A conversation with Jesus. Now, maybe this evening you're interested in Jesus. Maybe this evening you're not. But what can you expect from Jesus? Well, he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So you can expect to him to talk to you, to speak to you, as he spoke to this woman. So number one, expect Jesus to come looking for you. Verse 3, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee, but he needed to go through Samaria. Okay, Jews wouldn't have gone through Samaria, they would have gone round the side of Samaria. Jesus goes through Samaria. Why? Because he wants to meet with our woman. Now, she knows nothing about it, but he's waiting at the well to meet with her. And it's striking, isn't it, the lengths to which Jesus goes. He breaks every taboo, he crosses every boundary, just to speak to her. So she obviously matters to him a great deal. So why would you think that you don't matter to Jesus? And just like her, Jesus knows that you're wary too. She's very wary, isn't she? A strange man starting to talk to her. How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? Another man, think I know everything about men, heard it all before, don't start that line with me. Which is why Jesus, he's easy, isn't he, with her? He's natural. She's not an evangelistic project. And neither are you. So you can expect him to be, if I can realize it, easy with you, natural with you, real with you. He'll treat you as a person, not as a project. An American Airlines pilot was fired up to tell people about Jesus. So as the plane took off, he gave the usual announcements over the PA, and then he announced this. He said, ladies and gentlemen, would the Christians on board please identify themselves by raising their hands? And then he urged the rest of the passengers to use the four-hour flight to discuss Christianity with the Christians. And then he added that he too would be happy to discuss these things. Well, you can guess people's response, especially as this was post 9/11, and especially when he started calling the non-Christians crazy for not believing. Some of the passengers took it as a threat and started ringing their relatives. We've got a religious nutter and he's piloting the plane. You contrast that with Jesus. There's no pressure, no hard sell. He knows tonight you're wary. Maybe you find yourself sitting next to that pilot or the equivalent of at Amium Park and they've nailed you. Think, oh no, and there they go again. And having a deep and meaningful conversation and I've been put on the spot. And you're wary of these things. You don't like it. And it's, in a sense, that's fair enough, isn't it? She doesn't like it. So Jesus doesn't pressurize her, doesn't crowd her, doesn't go for the jugular. He knows you're wary. You're not a project. You're a person. So you can expect him to be gentle, wise, friendly, genuine. He may want you to do something for him. Give me a drink. Number two, a conversation with Jesus. Expect misunderstandings. Does this woman get it? Well, not all at once. Verse 11. Where then do you get that living water? What are you talking about? And anyway, who are you? Are you greater than our father Jacob? Verse 15, sir, give me this water that I may not thirst, but in case this is just another wind-up. I think I've heard it all before from men, nor come here to draw. Verse 19, sir, I perceive you're a prophet. And so it goes on, doesn't it? There are lots of misunderstandings in this conversation. She doesn't get it all at once. And of course the reason is that Jesus is talking about heavenly things, but her feet are firmly on the ground. Now of course Jesus has come to bring heaven on earth. But sometimes when he talks about these things in the gospel, it's all too much, it's all too fast. And you think, I don't know, I don't get this, what's it about? And that's okay. That's perfectly okay. Don't worry if you misunderstand things. Don't worry if things aren't clear. Don't worry if the message isn't yielding itself and you don't get to the end before you've barely begun and you think, oh, what's this all about? You know, Christians say things like this, don't you? Do you know the Lord? Well, what on earth does that mean? Do I know the Lord? I don't know what you're talking about, and that's okay. It's okay. But you see, she keeps talking to Jesus. He keeps the conversation going. That's the point. So if you misunderstand, you don't get it, if things aren't yielding, that's okay. Don't worry. Just keep the conversation going, though. Keep listening to his word. That's where he will talk to you. And maybe keep talking to him, saying, well, I think it's important. I'm not quite sure why, but help me to understand it. And if you've got a Bible, keep reading the Bible. And keep talking with gentle, wise, friendly Christians. You know, if you've got the pilot from the American Airlines next to you, well, go and look for the friendly, easy ones to talk to. But it's okay to misunderstand. It's not a problem. Expect misunderstandings. And number three, a conversation with Jesus. Well, expect the offer of life. Verse 10, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. As we said earlier, isn't that interesting? Jesus appeals to her desire. She's thirsty. She's been looking around. What do you do when you're thirsty? Well, you can't find, you fix on whatever you think. And she's just fixed on men. That's where she feels that she's going to be satisfied. Relationships, romance, sex, those things will satisfy. But 5 + 1 tells you it hasn't worked. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, which of course is why she's gone from one failed relationship to the next failed relationship to the next failed relationship. And I'm sure each time she said to herself, this is going to be different. This man is different. It'll be new. It'll be special. It'll be different this time. But it never is. Life is still empty. She's still thirsty. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Says Jesus, you're too easily satisfied. My friend, her equation is 5 + 1. What's your equation? Maybe it's work. Maybe you've been told it's work by other people. And you're working harder and harder and harder, but actually you're just still as thirsty as ever you were. And what happens when it doesn't work out, or you lose your job, or you retire? Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Maybe it's children. But then when things go wrong, you blame yourself. And when they leave, the home feels empty. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Maybe it's excitement. But you have to keep on repeating it because it doesn't last. And you get addicted to excitement because it doesn't work. It doesn't satisfy. So you have to keep on revving it up, inventing bigger thrills, bigger highs, coming back to it faster, quicker. This time it'll be different, but it never is. Because whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Jesus appeals to her desire. And Jesus appeals to your desire. And he says to you, you're too easily satisfied. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. So stop going back to it. Whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. Stop fixing on the created. Because you were made for something bigger. You were made for the Creator himself. And my friend, you'll find that your soul is insatiable. The chambers of your soul are massive. They are much deeper and cavernous than ever you would realize. Which is why they can't be filled with anything except God himself. As Augustine wrote, Lord, you've made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give will never thirst. Nearing the end, a conversation with Jesus, number four. Well, expect him to touch a raw nerve. Verse 16, go call your husband and come here. I have no husband. Why is she so private? What is she hiding? Well, it's because having run after the gods of romance and sex, they've left her empty, haven't they? But more than that, they've left her dirty and ashamed. And Jesus will talk to you about your sin, but perhaps not as you expect. He doesn't denounce this woman, does he? He doesn't say, you fornicator, you adulteress. All he says is, go call your husband. It's a scalpel. It's painful. But it's not to chase her away. It's so that she'll come to him for forgiveness and a new start. Maybe you're gay. But Jesus won't say to you, how unspeakably wicked. There's a special place in hell for people like you. Which is the impression you might get from some. He's the friend of sinners. He's not come to push us away. He's come to heal and restore and save. A woman student said, only when I'm around Christians do I feel guilty. Only when I'm around Christians do I feel truly loved. And that's because being around Christians, she was around Jesus. And it's because he loves us that he touches that raw nerve so that I can be forgiven and changed. He's the one who loves me. He truly, truly loves. And in fact, he doesn't just touch our sin. The wonder of it all in the gospel is he takes our sins away. For love's sake, he bears our sins. Jesus will go to a cross, and on that cross he will die the punishing death for sin we deserve to die. So that all who come to him can be forgiven and healed and restored. Do you remember Jesus' words to wicked Saul of Tarsus? This is the man who is a fanatic. He is a man who is out to murder, to kill Christians. What does Jesus say to him? It's hard for you to kick against the goads. What's a goad? A goad is a stick with a big spike on the end. And you use it to prod cattle to keep them under control. Here's this wicked man. This man who's been pursuing, he's a wolf, pursuing sheep, hunting down Christians, putting them to death. But when you hear Jesus' voice as he speaks to Saul, there's no hostility in Jesus' voice, is there? There's no revenge in Jesus' voice. Only concern. Saul, this road to hell is causing you nothing but pain. So Saul, stop. Turn round. Come to me for forgiveness, for life. Don't make it harder than it needs to be. You get the sense from Jesus when he says that to Saul, let's make it easy, let's make it gentle. My friend, that's why there has to be a raw nerve. Because yes, I am a sinner, you know that. We all know that. I haven't loved God with all my heart, I haven't loved my neighbor as myself. And so Jesus, the road that you're on will bring you nothing but sorrow. So stop. There's no harshness in his voice. No revenge in his voice. Stop. Turn round. Come back. Come to me for forgiveness. Don't make it harder than it needs to be. Let's make it easy. Let's make it gentle. You'll only find relief in coming to me, says Christ. So come to me. Come to me for forgiveness, for life, for cleansing. Come to the blood of cleansing that makes the foulest clean. Will you come to Jesus? Lord, I've messed up, but you died on the cross to save messed up sinners. To save me. Forgive me. Change me. And finally, a conversation with Jesus. Expect to be on first name terms with God. The woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming. When he comes, he will tell us all things. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. I myself am. The God who is. The God who can be known. The God who is never more like God than when he welcomes sinners. That when in Christ he bleeds on a cross and dies for their sins. The God who is here tonight. The God who is here to meet with you.